This is Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast, brought to you by TaylorTalk.org. Welcome, ladies and gents, to episode 62 of Taylor Talk. My name is Adam.
I'm Diane.
And Steve.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey, how's it going,
Pretty
Adam?
Pretty good.
Good, good. Doing well. So, we know that a lot of you listeners are here for a very special guest interview this episode. So, we are going to play that for you right now. For those that want the news and calendars, be sure to stay after the interview, and we'll do those then. Thanks, guys. Here's our interview. So last week, we promised all you guys a very, very special discussion on the Highway Don't Care music video. And we brought in a very special guest to chat about it with us. You probably recognize his name because it appears in the opening credits. We have Shane Drake with us. Shane, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Great to be here.
Awesome. Thanks for coming. We appreciate it quite a bit. So we've got a bunch of questions for you, Shane, that we're hoping you have some answers for.
Yeah, fire away.
So, I guess before we actually get into the video itself, just a little background. Looking at some of the videos you've done in the past, you know, several years back, you did videos for Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy, those type of bands. How do you find yourself transitioning into country?
Well, you know, I started, you know, doing metal bands, you know, when I first got started in the business, and that was and little punk bands for like Tooth and Nail. And, you know, it's like with any sort of craft, you develop and you grow. And I eventually grew into sort of bigger rock bands. And even when I first started, did the first Paramore video, I mean, they were nobody. I mean, I did a video for them in their hometown for Pressure. I think the video was maybe $8,000 total. And, you know, no one knew who they were, and they were just kids. And we were just, you know, shooting, you know, just at what seemed just another fun sort of punk band, but they turn out to be, you know, a worldwide sensation. And you just never know, you know, which bands are going to do that. And that happened with a few bands that I worked with, which sort of launched me into sort of a bigger arena for videos for sort of pop and rock. And then as sort of, you know, my craft developed and my skills got better, I was, you know, asked to do, you know, more mainstream work of already established artists, you know, eventually getting to work with Timbaland and Angels and Airwaves. You know, obviously I've always been a huge Blink-182 fan. So getting to work with Tom was fantastic. And, you know, getting to work with artists like Avril Lavigne and Kelly Clarkson eventually led to this sort of notion that, you know, I want to branch out and do more genres, you know, and I've done a little bit of hip hop here and there. I've done some Flo Rida stuff. I've done, you know, like I said, Timbaland. I did a Trick Daddy video back in the day. But, you know, I grew up in the sticks. You know, I grew up in a really small town in Northern California called Red Bluff. And so I kind of grew up on country music, even though I've really always been sort of a city boy at heart and sort of had a, you know, definitely a much more sort of ear for rock and mainstream music. The country was always part of my lineage and part of, you know, my foundation. So when I sort of got to the place where I felt comfortable, I could branch out into other genres, country was just sort of a natural transition for me to jump into for music videos. And, you know, so I reached out to a production company in Nashville that was very interested in repping me. And from there, it was just, you know, a matter of getting that market familiar with who I was, you know. I still don't do a ton of country videos. Luckily I've been, you know, fortunate to do some relatively, you know, big ones and notable ones in the last year or two, but, you know, it's still a relatively new market for me.
Like Tim McGraw, Taylor Swift, and Keith Urban, they're nobodies, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, when I booked that video, I was ecstatic. I still, like, you know, when I book a video, I'm still like a little kid at Christmas. I freak out. I love it. I'm so honored to have the job I have and have the opportunities I have that I still get really excited, really, like, you know, overjoyed when I book a video for, you know, for artists that I really love and have been following for, you know, for years. And to book, you know, these three superstars in one video, it was kind of mind blowing. I mean, so
how'd that come about?
I mean, you know, the process, you know, as it goes for a music video director is, you know, I get solicited music from record labels, you know, through my production company. They basically, you know, they'll go out and say, okay, we want this director and this director to listen to this song and see what, you know, kind of ideas they can come up for it. And so I was, you know, I've had a relationship with with Big Machine for a while, having worked with a couple of their other artists. And so they wanted me to take a crack at this Tim McGraw. And I wrote a treatment that I submitted, and Tim really liked, based off some of the things that he had sort of, you know, initially said that he wanted to be included in the video. And then from there, you know, we went back and forth on ideas and sort of further developed the idea. And Tim just felt like that I kind of got where he was coming from, and decided to hire me and bring me on. It was a risky move for him, you know, not that I'm a risk necessarily, but, you know, he's never worked with me. And for him to take on a new director to him for such a big track was really kind of an honor to me, because I know that, you know, he's got some directors that he's worked with numerous times that he could have gone back to and sort of played it safe. But, you know, he reached out to someone new, and I think that, you know, he was very happy with that decision in the end. You know, we've become friends, and, you know, really respect each other's art.
That's awesome. So speaking to the video specifically then, was the overall vision for it, was that your vision, or was that Tim's, or a collaborative effort? Like, where'd that all come from?
You know, it's different for every video. For this one, you know, sometimes an artist has exactly what they want done. They just want to know what your spin is on it. Other times an artist has no clue. They don't want to think about it. They just want someone to pull a rabbit out of a hat, essentially. And then sometimes an artist has an idea or a general through line that sort of, you know, is very sort of hazy, but they want a director to come and try and make their idea more focused and maybe more purposeful. And so Tim came to the table with some initial thoughts. You know, he did want a car crash. He wanted to somehow center around a car crash. No storyline was given other than that. And he definitely had some inspiration in terms of the sort of cinematic style of the narrative, you know, which he sent me a little video clip that he took of him in the car shooting the sun setting through some trees. It was very sort of pretty and cinematic and very sort of Terrence Malick inspired. And he wanted the video to have that same kind of pacing, be based off a car crash, and somehow be able to incorporate Taylor and Keith. And other than that, there was no other idea. So I basically took those sort of little nuggets and sort of went in my little cave of solace and started like putting the pieces together in my own mind and seeing how I could weave these sort of few thoughts of his into a fuller, more complete actual story that still maintained the essence of what he wanted to do, but filled in the blanks, essentially. And that's what I did. And then when I sort of came back to him, he liked how I had done that. You know what I mean? And what's funny about the impetus for it is, you know, when he sort of sent this idea of a car crash, apparently, and I only found this out at a panel that he and I did together last week, that the original idea actually came from his daughter to do something around texting and driving. And I didn't know that. And it's funny, as I was sort of filling in the missing pieces to build a creative, I came to that conclusion on my own that this car crash should be somehow motivated by distracted driving, which is, you know, obviously a very hot topic in our sort of current culture. So, you know, it's very interesting to see that, you know, that we were very much in the same wavelengths without me even really knowing about that. And oftentimes that is the case. You know, I mean, when I was working with Panic, almost every time I would get one of their tracks, I'd come up with an idea and I'd call Ryan or I'd call Brendan, and literally I'd pitch them an idea that they had in their heads as well and didn't know about it. And that's that sort of like being on the same page that really bonds an artist and a director. And that is something that happened with Tim and I with this idea.
See, that's interesting, learning where the car crash concept came from, because when I first heard the song, that was not necessarily what I pictured. You know, I just thought it was a couple like breaking up.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that the idea really was to give that impression that even from the visuals, that that's all this was going to be. You know what I mean? But again, we've seen that a lot. And, you know, not to say that that can't be done well even on its own, but really, you know, each video I do, and I'm sure each, you know, video with Tim and each song and whatever, as an artist, you want to kind of continue to raise the bar and make things more challenging and take things to that next level. And I think you know, to take it beyond just an arguing couple and then reveal it wasn't even the couple that you thought it was, and to show, you know, sort of a further reveal of Tim being the doctor and the one that actually comes and saves her life, and then revealing a boyfriend at the end that you don't really ever get to know, but you realize it isn't that critical to the story. To me, it's those pieces that sort of raise the bar and take narratives to a new and exciting, you know, place for me that allow me to stay really excited and motivated about what I do.
So was that your idea to do the split storyline where you have Tim's story and you have the girl's story and then they merge at the end?
Yeah, that was an idea that, you know, I wanted the audience to feel like Tim and this girl had a relationship that had gone awry. And then I wanted to flip the script that when the car crash happened and it's revealed that Tim is actually the doctor, that there's that sort of, oh, wow, that's, I never saw that coming. Sort of an interesting twist on the sort of typical sort of boy girl video genre. And, you know, another thing is, you know, Tim had definitely not wanted to have a love interest. Obviously, he's married to Faith Hill, who's beautiful, and they've got a great marriage and they're wonderful. But, you know, and I think Tim, you know, wanting to respect that side of his life, likes to keep love interest sort of to a minimum for him personally in a music video, just because it's hard to push past that character of who Tim McGraw really is in real life and then envision him with a love interest. You know what I mean? And so our idea was to really fool the audience and to say, oh no, we're going to go for this love interest, and then sort of turn the table and show you that in all actuality that he did not have a love interest. He was simply the doctor that was, you know, living his own life, texting whoever, which, you know, isn't really irrelevant. But
I almost saw that as the doctor receiving a text that there's an emergency, get to the hospital. That's how I interpreted it.
So it's exactly it. But essentially until then, what he's doing is when he's working out and whatever, we had him sort of looking at his phone constantly and sometimes, you know, sort of looking through text again, just as a normal guy does. And then he does get the one critical text when he's shaving, which absolutely is a call from the hospital saying, hey, there's an emergency. You need to come in and do your job. And you're right in that, but the rest of the texts were supposed to just be red herrings, you know, throwing you off, making you think that those were him texting her, when really those were just him living his life, checking his phone, whatever, you know what I mean? Until the main, you know, text comes in, you know, when he's, like I said, when he's shaving, that is indeed, like you said, from the hospital saying, you know, we've got an emergency, come in.
Shane, you definitely had me confused on that one, because I was totally to the point of, I totally bit your line there to think that, you know, Tim was having a relationship with her, and then, you know, that was just like, boom. I was like, wow. I was like, I did not see that coming. So yeah. You did an awesome job.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, and sometimes that, you know, sometimes that stuff doesn't get pulled off. I mean, I'm glad we pulled it off and that's in it, and everyone seems to get it. But sometimes, you know, you try those things and people just stay confused the whole time. They're like, I don't get it. Are they together? You know, just save his girlfriend's life. You know, and you know, it's a fine line of trying to pull off that switcheroo, but I think we did a pretty good job on this one.
So what was the girl's fate? Like, it was never sort of, I guess we interpret she lived because the parents are hugging and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is to show that it's good news. The good news is she made it. You know what I mean? Obviously, it's not spelled out. And I think that's sort of what keeps this video on sort of a more mature level, is every detail of the story isn't spelled out. You know what I mean? I think too often with, you know, cinema that we don't like and music videos that we don't like, is because they so dumb down their audience by telling them every little detail of what the storyline is. And they forget the fact that, you know, people have ways of drawing their own conclusions from little nuances. And I think, you know, the what we use as a device to show that she was okay, but again, didn't want to spell it out too dramatically, was that Tim goes and tells the family, and we see the family react in a sort of happy manner or a relieved manner, sort of does communicate that she lived. Again, if, you know, there's certainly going to be people that don't fully get that because we didn't spell it out on purpose. You know, it really is, because that's sort of, I think, what keeps this video treating the viewers as smart, intelligent viewers, you know?
Right. Well, that scene seemed brilliant to me because there are so many subtle things to it. You have the parents hugging. And something I noticed with it, too, is it's almost like the parents are turning their back on the boyfriend and the boyfriend has a guilty look, like it was his fault that they're there in the first place.
Absolutely. And that was absolutely the intent. The whole motivation I kept giving him the entire time I was filming them was, listen, you feel terrible. Even when you see him before they get the news and he's sitting there with his phone, you start to kind of loosely draw the connection that, oh, that's the phone that was texting with her. You know what I mean? And you see him sitting there worried, going, wow, I can't believe this has happened and this is probably all my fault. And then when the parents actually turn to hug, you see a sense of relief on his face, but you still have this sense of, well, I'm not responsible for her death anymore, but I'm still responsible for all this pain. You know what I mean?
Right. So moving on to Taylor specifically, was this your first time ever working with her or even meeting her or anything like that?
Yeah, I'd never worked with her before. I'd written on a couple treatments for videos in the past that I didn't end up booking, but this is the first time I ever got to meet her and got to work with her, and it was all very exciting. It was all very quick. You know, we had limited time with her, which is, you know, one of the challenges that I knew in writing the treatment was I needed to come up with a way to incorporate her in the story that allowed her to feel like a true part of the narrative or a true part of the sort of ethos of the narrative. And while at the same time, knowing I only had her for 2 hours during the day.
Oh, wow. That's not very long at all.
No, I mean, you know, you would assume I had her all day because she looks spectacular, but that's really just a testament to how much of a superstar she is and how professional she is and great at what she does. You know, I had her for 2 hours on set of day two. When we filmed all the apartment stuff and all the hospital stuff, we started with her scenes in the morning, just on green screen in a small little setup with the curtains. And, you know, I met her, and then 5 minutes later, we put her in front of the camera, and I was sort of walking her through what the whole purpose of this scene was and what her sort of motivation was. And then the camera started rolling, and she just turned it on.
Well, her character was so cool. You had her reflection in the glass. You had her reflection on the broken mirrors at the end. So was her character, you know, she's supposedly singing the song through the radio. So was her character almost supposed to be like an angel, or is she sort of overlooking that girl?
She absolutely is something sort of more surreal. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say angel, but the idea really is that, you know, as Tim would attest to, this was supposed to be sort of Taylor's voice coming through the radio, but I wanted to be more symbolic than that. Not just, a voice coming through the radio, but maybe a voice coming through her own conscience, maybe a voice coming through just, you know, her own sort of state of being. And so we see that not only is she in the reflections sort of surrounding the girl as the girl's going through her whirlwind of emotions, we see Taylor sort of almost narrating that, but we also see Taylor in her own space, which is a bit ethereal and sort of, you know, it is a bit heavenly, but it wasn't intended to be heavenly as much as it was intended to just simply be this sort of hovering presence that really has more of a consciousness to it, in connection with the girl, as opposed to, you know, a unique, separate angel-like spirit. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we'd originally thought, okay, well, this would be great because if we only have 2 hours with Taylor, then we can just shoot her on green and shoot her against these curtains, and that'll really give us the opportunity to incorporate her in a way that that makes it cool. It was my idea to do the reflections and to have that happen like that, because I think that to me was the easiest way to connect her to the girl without actually having to have her be in the same space with the girl. And then it was also sort of my thought that I wanted something in addition to those reflections. And that's why I thought, you know, we should really shoot a separate setup with her and just these curtains, these shears, which, ended up just being breathtaking footage.
So. Yeah. Which is a great way to utilize her for such a short period of time too.
Yeah. And I tell you, I couldn't have probably done it with some other artist. It probably wouldn't have worked out as well. I mean, only having 2 hours, I need you to nail every single take, and I need you to be someone that knows exactly how cameras, you know, how to work the camera and how to, you know, how to sort of find the light and find the right sort of spaces to be in. And Taylor, you know, just beyond professional, beyond just, you know, fantastic at what she does. Just as soon as the cameras are rolling, has the instincts and sort of, you know, just the sort of natural ability to just know exactly what to do and where to be. And so for me, that allowed me to get a lot more footage out of her than I normally would have out of an artist, you know, considerably less seasoned than her.
How long ago were her scenes shot?
I mean, we shot, the whole video was shot the first weekend of April.
Oh, so she was already on tour. That's why she was so busy.
Yeah, exactly. And so we shot her, I think it was on the 2nd of April. I can't remember, 1st or 2nd of April. I'm pretty sure it was the 2nd, though. We shot her in the morning. And yeah, we shot Tim all day on day one. Then day two, we started with her and then moved into Tim's narrative. And then we came back to LA and shot Keith the next Saturday in Los Angeles.
So Keith shot entirely separately. He was not even in the same state.
Yep, not in the same state. because he was doing American Idol, so he was sort of tied up here in LA. He couldn't really leave this area. So we kind of had to sort of make do with what we had. And again, you know, with Keith, it was just a matter of finding a way for him to feel like he's in a similar environment, kind of as Taylor. Again, I'm not trying to sell a heaven setup as much as I am just sort of an otherworldly place that represents a state of consciousness for this narrative, and really, you know, tie in the two, even Keith being tied into the reflections, you know, at the end, just really to give that sort of otherworldliness of it.
So was it intimidating for you at all, like having to direct these three big stars?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I've worked with some really big stars. I'm by no means new at this job, but every time I get, you know, booked on with a new artist that I've never worked with that, you know, I have great admiration for, it's always a little nerve wracking. I mean, I'm just a kid from a small town. You know what I mean? This was, you know, never something I knew would end up working out for me and happening. And so I definitely have a few days where I have to just like take some deep breaths and think through, like, you know, the fact that I know what I'm doing and they hired me for a reason, and that this is my job and I'm good at it. And, you know, I eventually get past those butterflies, but absolutely. I mean, the first time I met Tim, we met for lunch a couple days before the shoot. And, you know, I think I'm pretty good at playing off like I'm calm and cool, but inside I was definitely freaking out. I mean, he's a superstar to me. I mean, he's a superstar to a lot of people, but you know, to me as well. And it was definitely one of those moments. And with Taylor, I didn't even have a chance to be nervous. I only had her for 2 hours. I mean, I met her and then 5 minutes later I was shooting her. You know what I mean? And so it was like, that was kind of nice, I suppose, because I didn't have a chance to be super overwhelmed because there was just no time for it. I had to get to work. But, you know, afterwards, like, she really has such a great spirit and such a friendly demeanor. You know, when we were done shooting, you know, we talked for a little bit just about, you know, the process and mutual friends, and just, you know, she was just really kind and said, you know, she hopes that we can work together again. And I just, you know, I just found that really, really exciting, considering we've only, you know, done 2 hours of work together so far. And so she just, you know, she really impressed me on multiple levels.
Well, from what I've heard, she makes people feel very comfortable when she meets them. I've actually never met her myself, so I don't know, but that's what I hear.
All right. How have you guys not met her?
We just haven't yet. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened to us.
All right. Well, but yeah, she is very personable and very, very good at making you feel, you know, very much at ease. You know, she's, I mean, she's definitely where she is in life and in this business for a reason. It's not an accident, you know, that Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift and is, you know, one of the most, if not the most, you know, popular person in our country.
for sure. Music.
So.
Not just the country, like the world right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So since I'm the only girl on this panel right now, I figure that I should ask this question. Was it Tim's idea to do some, you know, workout and walk around shirtless on the set of the video? Because was that him or was that – where did that come from?
Yeah, no, Tim wanted to be shirtless the whole video. No.
Oh, really?
No, I'm joking. God, you'd kill me if you heard me say that. No, actually.
Well, maybe he listens to the show. We don't know. Yeah, right. He's too busy for us.
He was actually very, very reticent about it. He's obviously very fit. He's very disciplined in his training, his workouts, and just staying fit and healthy. But it was what I sort of had come up with before he and I even talked was just sort of like, a single man, who's a professional, obviously doctor in this case, what would his sort of daily routine look like? And, I just imagine a guy would probably do a little workout, shave, just get himself together, be very methodical and sort of calculated about his day and have sort of a routine. And all those things just seemed like typical routines. And so when Tim and I talked, it actually resonated with him, and that was a routine that he was familiar with and made sense to him as well. But when it came to, the shirtless thing, that was just something that I felt rang true to the moment. You know what I mean? Like, I really feel like if, when I'm shaving, I'm not wearing a shirt usually. You know what I mean? I'm just out of the shower, wrapped in a towel or, something. And so, like, for me, I would just sort of thought that just rang true. And so it was something that he was a little nervous about, and not because he felt weird about how he looked, but he didn't want to come off in a way that was very braggy or showy about his physique. He's very humble in that nature. But eventually he sort of agreed that it did ring true to that moment. And so, the idea of him rushing in and throwing on a shirt, like, all that stuff kind of made sense with someone who's just going through the routine and then all of a sudden gets a call that urgently snaps them out of it and makes them have to sort of make changes and get going. And so sort of getting dressed seemed the easiest, sort of device to show that urgency. So again, it wasn't his idea, and he was not opposed, but he was a little, a little hesitant for sure about, I certainly wouldn't have been if I was that ripped. That guy's back is more ripped than any back I've ever seen in my life.
So changing gears, because that's making me slightly uncomfortable. It makes me feel a little self-conscious thinking about Tim with no shirt on.
We're gonna have to do some push-ups and sit-ups later, Adam. We'll get in shape. We'll be good.
Yeah, seriously, that man's making me want to hit the gym right now. I mean, he's but just changing gears a little, what was the funniest thing that happened on set during the whole experience?
Funniest thing that happened on set. Well, I mean, honestly, it kind of happened with Keith Urban. We were actually with with one of Tim's sort of day-to-day people, and she was just sort of talking to Keith, and she's like, "So you got, I gotta know, like, how is Shakira?" And he's like, "I'm not on that show." And so she was really embarrassed. She's like, "Oh, it's the dumbest thing said of the day." Blah, blah. And then we the day continues and we continue shooting. And then Keith comes back to watch the monitors and he sees himself performing. He says, "Oh, no, is this live or is this pre-recorded?" And I'm like, and she said, "Well, Keith, you're watching yourself. It had to have been pre-recorded. It can't be live. You're right here right now." So, and then Keith acknowledged, like, "Now I have said the stupidest thing of the day." So that was kind of like an interesting sort of moment of someone messing up something with Keith and then having him sort of take the ball of mistake and make it even bigger.
That's funny. So there's no bloopers with Taylor then? She's too perfect?
She was not there long enough. She was in and out, and the whole thing went pretty flawlessly with her. Yeah.
Cool. So, Diane and Steve, do you have any questions, any more questions specific to the video?
Well, one that I have for you, Shane, the actual scene of, like, the car crash, it seems like it's, afternoon, evening, but yet the scenes of the hospital are all kind of a lot later. Like, at night, you can see the helicopter coming in, it's all dark, and you see all of Nashville there. Was that because doing it at night would seem a lot more, like, it just was more powerful that way, is the way I felt?
Yeah, well, we shot the helicopter scenes during the afternoon and in the evening, just so we had the option to use either. Mm-hmm. But in the edit, it sort of made sense that if she had crashed at sort of sunset time, by the time the helicopters got there, got her loaded in and out of that car and then got back to the hospital, it probably would have been night. So it really seemed more, as well as, like you said, being much more sort of cinematic and much more grand in scope to be Knight, it actually fit more narratively to make it Knight in terms of what probably the timing would have been if that process had actually gone down.
I see. What about using Vanderbilt Medical Center? How did that come about?
Well, that came about from my executive producer, Chandra. She had a friend that worked at the hospital, I believe, and she just sort of reached out to them and said, "Hey, what's the chance of us using your hospital for some scenes?" And you know, she's like, "I don't know. It seems unlikely, but let me put you in contact with this guy." She got put in contact with a particular person at the hospital who was in charge of those kind of affairs, and they actually, the Life Flight team and Vanderbilt, both were just very excited about the opportunity to do this. I think mainly because the narrative made sense for them. It wasn't just wanting to use a hospital for a hospital. It's like we were actually showing the hospital and the Life Flight team as sort of a hero of the video. You know what I mean? As you know, with Tim as part of the doctor staff and the Life Flight as part of this sort of device that ends up saving the girl's life, like this ended up being a really good opportunity for Life Flight and Vanderbilt to sort of get some recognition. You know what I mean? So for them, I think, you know, they do let crews come up there periodically for news clips and whatnot, but I think they're very like wary on letting film crews up there for narrative and for music videos, just because I think, you know, it's a hospital and they're saving, they're a big establishment. They're saving lives. There's a lot of, you know, people coming in and out. There's a lot of traffic. It's very, you know, it can be very unsafe. And if a film crew is not friendly or sort of, you know, welcoming to their type of situation, willing to sort of shut down for a second and let them do their job, if something happens in an emergency situation, they could be in a really bad place. So I think they got the sense from our production team that we were very, you know, willing to be flexible and work with, you know, their sort of parameters. But also I think the narrative just really spoke to them. And so they just rolled out the red carpet for us. It was really wild.
If all else failed, I guess you could have walked in and been like, "This is a public service announcement against texting and driving. Now are you guys interested?"
Well, see, I think they always kind of saw it as that, even though I'd never pitched it as that, and neither did Tim. We certainly didn't want to do that. It's first and foremostly a music video. But it really does have a message in there that is of value, you know, and not every music video does. And it's nice to be a part of one, you know, that does once in a while. And, you know, I think for them, even though for us, it's first and foremost a music video, I think for them and their involvement, it's very much a PSA, you know what I mean? But it's also advertisement. I mean, Life Flight is a non-profit organization. And so they count on donations to keep those helicopters running and to keep the staff and to keep saving lives. And so I think for them, this really helps them raise more awareness and continue doing the amazing work that they do.
Yeah, that's some great exposure for them as well. So
absolutely. And it's an exposure that I don't think anyone disputes as being very valid, as opposed to, you know, I do a number of videos where we have to do product placements, but where we actually get to sort of plug an organization that does something so meaningful and, you know, and so impactful. It really it's really nice to be a part of that, you know, for a change.
Cool. Well, I mean, overall, I think the video turned out fantastic. I thought it was such a great video.
Thank you.
But do you have a few minutes to maybe ask some general questions about like just your career and some of the other videos you've done?
Yeah, go for it.
So who was your favorite artist you've ever worked with out of all these countless artists?
Well, I mean, it's always hard to say that, because you say that about one and you're like, "Oh, but Dad, I love this experience with this." You know,
If it makes you feel better, none of them are listening to this show, so you won't offend anybody.
Well, the truth be told, you know, I've had my most enjoyable times with artists that have been collaborative. A lot of artists just do not have this visual side of their mind. They're just singers or performers that are not visualists. And so on those jobs, it's a little more tedious. It's not quite as enjoyable because we don't share the same sort of art. They're music based and I'm visual based. And so those can sometimes be a little bit more tiresome and grueling. Whereas the videos for artists like Panic, like Paramore, like Tim, where it's definitely a more collaborative effort, where it's, you know, it's the band coming with definitive ideas and me coming with definitive ideas and us, you know, sort of melding those ideas. It really makes the experience, you know, a lot better. I mean, just recently we worked with Tegan and Sarah, and they were also very collaborative, very much, you know, on the phone with me, you know, every few days up into the shoot, just, you know, ironing out the idea and ironing out the narrative and ironing out, you know, different elements of the video. And to me, that makes the process so much fun because you feel like you're on a team. You almost feel like as the director, you're part of the band for that part of, you know, that short period of time, which is a lot of fun. And again, like it's always that sort of artistic camaraderie that has been my favorite element of working with different bands.
Yeah, that sounds like it would make it a lot more fun. I'm not going to lie. I was very excited to find out that you directed a bunch of Panic videos because I've got a soft spot for Panic because I grew up here in Vegas too. So
yeah, yeah. No,
I'm a big fan. And I've actually seen several of your videos before I even knew it was you directing them.
Oh, cool.
That was pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was fun. I was fortunate to get to work with them a lot on their last album cycle.
That's super cool. So how long does a video take beginning to end?
You know, it depends on the process. This one took a while because this was obviously a bigger budget. We shot for, you know, 2.5 days in different cities. You know, I mean, like I said, we shot the video in the first week of April. And even before then, we'd spent a month, you know, in pre-production, just going over the ideas and making sure that everything was, you know, succinct. So, you know, it was at least 3 weeks of pre-production. And then, you know, we filmed the first week of April, 2 days in Nashville, 1 day in Los Angeles. And then the post schedule was very grueling and long as well, because we had to do titles. We had to do sound design on that middle part. You know, and then the video itself it's a long song. And so the edit took a while, and color correction, you know, obviously took a while. And so by the time we were finished, I mean, the video just premiered, I mean, this last week. So it's probably been close to a 2 month process on this one from beginning to end of the whole shebang.
Wow.
It's not usually that long. Usually it's about, you know, 3 weeks. It's usually about a week of pre-pro. You know, you shoot for a day and then you've got about 2 weeks of post, which is, you know, editing and coloring and whatnot. But that's, you know, that's typical, is 3 to 4 weeks, but this was more like 6 to 8.
So this is going to sound a little weird.
Okay.
So Diane, she seems to be interested in Tim with no shirt on. So I've got to...
We're back to this. Okay.
We're back to Tim McGraw, yes.
Yeah, sorry. It's something I forgot earlier. But how was it seeing Tim with no hat on?
Because he always has a hat on, you know? He's a superstar like that. So, I mean, what was that like, seeing his hair?
Well, you know, I mean, look, Tim is, to me, he's also an actor. I mean, he was you know, in an Oscar, you know, winning film, you know, Inside. So like that whole movie, he doesn't have his hat on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I just sort of, you know, am used to seeing him as an actor as well as a singer. And so for me, it really was, very normal. You know what I mean? Like, I know a lot of people who don't really watch the movies, but just follow, you know, his singing career. It definitely was a unique thing. And a lot, you know, you look at the comments on the video on YouTube and Vevo, you see that, you know, a lot of them are like, oh, wow, it's so weird to see him without his hat on. But for me, I'd seen it, you know, in movies before. And so it was really absolutely no shocker.
Fine.
Uh-oh. What are you looking for there?
I don't know. Yeah, no, I'm just messing around. But, before we wrap up, you know, just a few last questions. Do you have any plans to direct any of Taylor or Tim's videos in the future?
Tim and I are in talks right now about his next single, which I will not announce. I will let him do that. But so hopefully that happens. It might be a pretty fun and exciting concept and fun sort of summertime song.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Yeah, but for Taylor, I actually was just up for one that I didn't end up getting, but I'm likely going to be up for the next one as well. So we'll see. She's got a lot of great directors in her camp and in her past. So sort of, you know, getting in that door, you know, is going to probably take more than a 2-hour shoot with her.
Cool. So what are your immediate plans? Do you have any videos coming out soon?
I just released two this week, the Tim McGraw, obviously, and then I just released a new video for The Wanted for Walks Like Rihanna. And I am currently writing treatments for a number of different artists. But yeah, today I had two releases that both premiered in the top 10 biggest releases of the week.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
That's awesome. So all your videos are on your website, shanedrake.com, right?
Not all of them. No, you can go there. I also am rep by a company called DNA. And if you go to DNALA.com, you can go there and go to their director roster and check on Shane Drake, and you'll see some more recent videos.
Okay, DNALA.com, so everyone can see him there. Cool. So if anybody has any questions that we didn't ask you, would you mind if they like just email us and maybe we can forward you one email and maybe get some extra questions answered if anyone has any?
Absolutely. And, you know, you can have people ask me questions on Twitter too or whatever.
Twitter. So your Twitter account is at Shane Drake, right?
Yep, that's it.
So yeah, go follow Shane on Twitter. If you have questions, ask him on Twitter or email us, taylortalk@taylorswift13.org, and we can always forward them to him.
Yep.
And yeah, we appreciate you giving us all this time. Like, that's awesome that you took some time out of your day for us. We really, really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. And I feel honored to have been asked to be here anyway.
Wow. It's an honor that you were honored. You want to keep this circle going? We can
circle
do it.
Circle of honor.
I'm starting to self-implode. I don't know where it even goes next to make sense.
Oh.
What an honor. Cool. Well, thanks again, Shane. For everyone out there listening, we're going to put up the music video. We're going to embed it in the episode guide for you guys to watch, as well as the behind-the-scenes video that you did, and also the presentation from the Google Hangout, which, you know, it's funny. I think I saw some people crying in that audience when the crash happened. So
yeah, it was funny. It definitely was a bit of a gasp, and then everyone pretty much cheered when they saw the life flight come in. They saw Tim come out as a doctor. It was like really kind of a cool moment. You know, like a bunch of people sort of started applauding, and me and Tim looked at each other and we're like, yeah, we did it, man.
It worked.
Yeah.
Was that a little nerve-wracking at first? I feel like this is going on and on. I was totally wrapping it up and now I came up with another question. Was it like nerve-wracking? Because you're like premiering it in front of a theater full of fans.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like immediate feedback.
Yeah. I mean, I've never done that in my life. I mean, I've obviously, you know, I've done premieres that I've gone to the sites that have done the premieres, whether it's Rolling Stone or Vivo or MTV or wherever. And that's nerve-wracking enough. But to have been in front of a live audience to sort of immediately know by their reactions how well they liked it. It was definitely nerve-wracking, but I really, and again, not in a sort of egomaniac way, I really feel like we had a good video here. And so I really was pretty confident that people were going to like it. So.
Oh, you know what? Something random. I keep going on. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
why specifically did you do opening credits? I'm just curious. That's a random curiosity question.
Because by the time we'd finished the edit, and again, we were never really going for a straight music video. We really wanted to make it feel like a little mini movie. And again, you know, a lot of music theater directors try to do that these days because it's we all kind of want to make movies. It's why, you know, it's one of our main motivations. But, you know, in this, by the time we'd finished the edit, it really did feel like a little sort of movie. And so, it felt like it would really set a good tone to put the artist's name. And plus with such iconic artists, like these are big names. And so it felt like, wow, this would really be a very iconic way to lead into the video with, you know, with these names coming up and people going, this is like, these are three huge artists. I can't wait to see this, and really sort of build that anticipation. You know what I mean? I originally had opted to have my title at the end after everything, because I really wanted it to just sit with the the talent that we're singing and the title. But Tim actually was more into me having my name up front with them, so I thought that was cool.
Oh, that was nice of him.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thanks again for your time, Shane. Guess we'll wrap it up for real this time.
Okay.
We'll call this little extra part at the end the encore.
Nice.
There you go.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I appreciate the insight on the video there. That really made us learn a lot. That's appreciate it.
Well, take care and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
Bye.
All right. Wow, that was a really insightful interview.
That was awesome.
That was so cool. I'm really glad Shane was able to join us for that. Yeah.
Heck yeah, we learned a lot. That was one thing, like, to actually have the director on our episode and like clear up any of those like questions or just like our understanding of it. Like, it made total sense and it was like good to see that in action.
Yeah, definitely. So as promised, we are going to do our news and calendar items now that the interview is gone and passed. Those of you that aren't interested, I guess you guys can tune out. But those who want to know what's been going on in the Taylor world, Diane's going to give us the news.
Okay, Adam. Well, first of all, the international Red Tour dates have been announced for Australia and New Zealand. Taylor is headed to the land down under in early December. Not only is this exciting news for Aussie and Kiwi Swifties, but it also marks a milestone for Taylor herself. Taylor Swift is the first female artist since Madonna to headline a stadium tour in Australia.
Woo,
so congratulations
Taylor.
To Taylor. Next up, Everything Has Changed was announced as the next UK single off the Red album. But for the music video, neither Taylor Swift nor Ed Sheeran will be appearing in the video. Ed is known for rarely appearing in his music videos, and he says, "People always say, eventually you'll have to be in your videos." For Ed Sheeran, though, he wants his music videos to be more about the visual than about the artist. Apparently, this mindset has rubbed off on Taylor herself because she agreed not to appear in the Everything Has Changed video.
That's interesting. Did you guys also hear that interview with Ed Sheeran where he was talking about he actually has two other songs that he wrote with Taylor, one of which is sitting on his phone? They actually recorded it?
I heard that. And I also heard a couple months ago, I think he lost his phone. So hopefully he has that song saved somewhere. Because otherwise, if he loses that again, I mean, we're all out of luck.
Upload it to the Apple Cloud.
We should start like a petition. We want the Taylor Ed duet.
Give it to us.
Let's do it.
And finally, calling all fashion designers. Diet Coke launched the Young Designer Challenge. To enter, you have to design Diet Coke's quote-unquote newest iconic t-shirt. The first place winner will receive $10,000, have their t-shirt design sold at Target, and get the chance to meet Taylor Swift at her Red Show finale in Nashville. For more information, you can visit cokeurl.com/MA9C. A link to this page will also be available in this episode's guide.
Awesome. Great. Thanks for that news, Diane. Steve, please give us the calendar.
Is Taylor Swift rudely barging in on a white veil occasion? Seems like it. Taylor's episode of The New Girl premieres Tuesday, May 14th on Fox. So make sure you tune in. Also, Taylor Swift is up against Bruno Mars and Justin Bieber for the Billboard Milestone Award. Be sure to vote at billboard.com/milestone, and you can vote as many times as you want to. The Billboard Music Awards for 2013 will take place on May 19th.
Cool. Thanks for that calendar, Steve.
Welcome, sir.
Finally, the tour updates. On May 7th, Taylor was in Louisville, Kentucky. The secret song that night was Enchanted. On May 8th, the next night, she was in Columbus, Ohio and did Our Song. Then finally, this weekend, May 11th and 12th, she was in Washington, D.C., singing Never Grow Up and The Best Day, respectively. The upcoming shows. The Red Show continues in Texas. Taylor will be in Houston, Texas on May 16th, in Austin, Texas on May 21st, San Antonio May 22nd, and in Arlington, Texas on May 25th. So if any of you are going to those shows, have fun. And before we sign off, remember there are a variety of ways you can contact us. You can email us, taylortalk@taylorswift13.org. You can tweet us, Facebook us, or Taylor Connect us to TaylorTalk13. Or you could leave us a voicemail to area code 240-31-SWIFT. You can also text us there. Standard text messaging rates apply. Or you could leave us a voicemail directly on TaylorTalk.com. www.thebandsmith.org. Thanks, guys. Remember, if you love us, go rate us on iTunes. We'd appreciate it. It helps fellow Swifties like you find us in iTunes when you give us nice little 5-star ratings. We hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Shane Drake. He was great to have around. Remember, if you have any questions for him, tweet him at Shane Drake or send your questions to us. We'll consolidate them into one nice, clean email for Shane and send them off to him. So, for episode 62, this has been Adam,
Diane,
and Steve.
Saying have a great day, guys. We will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Bye.
This podcast is not directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.